There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Good to have you here on this Tuesday edition of the show. Live local talk over the next hour. A little programming note with Auburn basketball. Pregame coming on at 5 this afternoon. Some move in the scheduling, and Midday Mobile today, 1 hour. Armed Alabama will start at about 105 right after news at the top of next hour. Armed Alabama special time from 1 to 2 o'clock today. So put that in your schedule. If you normally listen in the evenings, you're listening to the midday. Nice thing is, though, you know, if you can't get a chance to listen at 1 o'clock, podcast of that will be available through our website, which is fmtalk1065.com. You can click the link for podcast and get it there, or you can subscribe to get all our podcasts through iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, a bunch of different places. We sure appreciate those downloads. And remember, when you listen to a show, whatever the site is, if you give it thumbs up or stars or whatever, give us 5 of those, or however many they let you give. We sure appreciate that. All right, we'll go to audio from a press conference that aired just an hour ago, and a press conference with Mobile Police Chief Lawrence Batiste talking about the death of Officer Sean Tudor. This is started around 11 o'clock today, and here is the audio, about 10 minutes here of that press conference as the chief explains more of this, what surrounded the death of Officer Tudor.
Who lost his life at the hands of Marco Perez.
Let's go back to the beginning of that. All right, I think we have it now. We have it. We'll get to it in just a second.
Thank everybody for showing up. Just want to ask everybody to come together so that we can provide an update of the status of our investigation by Officer Sean Tudor. As we know, on Sunday at approximately 3 o'clock p.m., Officer Sean Tudor lost his life at the hands of Marco Perez. Give you an idea of what took place, a little bit of what took place. Officer Tudor, while scheduled to be off on that day, received information from a confidential informant, and he received authorization to come out and to follow up on the information that he received from a confidential informant. He coordinated with the on-duty supervisor to go to the area to lay eyes on the suspect in question, Marco Perez. As Officer Tudor pulled into the parking lot of Peach Place, Ms. Perez approached his vehicle at a rapid rate and caused Officer Tudor to have to take action. As a result of that, Officer Tudor and Marco Perez engaged in a scuffle. At some point, Marco Perez pulled a weapon and shot Officer Tudor multiple times. As a result of the injuries he sustained as a result of the gunshot, he later died from those injuries. As I've always shared with you guys, because this is an ongoing investigation, I will have to be somewhat limited and guarded in the information that I share with you, because the easy part of what we do a lot of times is actually making the arrest, but the hard part is following through and making sure that we have successful prosecution. And because this case has not been prosecuted as of yet, there's still limited information that I can provide about the details and the facts of the investigation at this time. With that being said, I am open to try to answer any questions that you may have, if I can. Yes, ma'am.
Was Officer Tudor working with a partner that day?
Say again?
Was Officer Tudor working with a partner that day, or was there a backup call?
As I said earlier, he coordinated with the on-duty supervisor, and so he did have backup to come in there. And as I said earlier, because Marco Perez approached him, he had to take action before his backup could arrive on scene.
So at the time, he was by himself?
At the time, he was by himself.
Can you say whether he had a bulletproof vest?
Yeah. He was not wearing a vest at that time.
Was he in uniform, or was he?
He was acting in a undercover capacity, and as a result of that, Peach Place Inn, we could not have driven a marked unit into that area and able to get, make contact with the individual. So in his undercover capacity, he was able to make contact with the individual by going in and being able to lay eyes on him before marked units pulled in.
How was Perez able to identify him? How did he know who he was if he was undercover?
Again, I told you that Marco Perez approached him, and so as he approached him, it caused the officer to have to take action and identify himself as an officer.
Okay. Did Officer Tudor fire his gun, or was it just Marco Perez shooting at him?
Again, that's part of the ongoing investigation, but what we believe at this point that Officer Tudor never had an opportunity to fire a shot. And again, I can't answer that right now. I think I shared with you guys on yesterday that we're doing everything we can to try to verify the validity of some of that information. But right now, I cannot confirm that at this point. I'm going to go back here to the back, and then I'll come back.
We know if he was able to pull his weapon at any time or just unable to fire it?
As I said, this is an ongoing investigation, but it doesn't appear at this time that Officer Tudor ever fired his weapon. He did at one point have his weapon unholstered, and then he reholstered his weapon because of the physical contact that took place. He could not control the individual by having a weapon drawn and one free hand. So as a result of that, he had to holster his weapon, and at this point, we don't know if he ever redrew his weapon.
Because he was, you said, alone at the time, when officers arrived as backup, were they aware that there was an officer down, or did they know they were coming into that situation?
I don't think that the officers were aware at the time they pulled in to take Mr. Perez into custody that Officer Tudor had been shot.
But yes. That Mr. Perez fired, was that a stolen gun?
We're still trying to verify that at this time.
Do we know how many times Perez fired his weapon?
He was shot multiple times. Again, because it's an ongoing investigation, the exact details, I have to remain very vague on.
Chief, are you able to tell us where he was shot?
Again, because of the ongoing investigation, I have to remain vague on some of the details of the investigation.
In terms of the apartment complex, was this in the parking lot or something?
This would have taken place in the parking lot, yes, sir.
Yes. Do you think that there'd be any way possible if he was being lured to this place, seeing that Marco Perez charged at him?
That would cause me to speculate, and so I don't want to speculate. I think that the facts will bear out when we go to trial what exactly took place. And that's our goal, is to make sure that everything that we say and do is factual, and that we're able to successfully prosecute Mr. Perez.
Was there anyone else with Perez at the time when he came towards Officer Tudor?
As of right now, I don't know that there was anyone else acting in concert with Marco Perez at that moment in time.
I know this is earlier. Or last week, that his mother had been charged in connection to that false report that was filed. Do y'all know if she was still in contact with him up until this point? Was he on the run?
Again, I would have to speculate, but the fact that she coordinated some of the stuff that she coordinated originally, I would say that there was still contact between she and he at some point.
Was
Is it possible to say a time frame the officer had been shot and then, you know, the backup arrived 30 seconds, 2 minutes later? Or
I have not looked at the anything that would indicate what's the time frame. You know, there was a Facebook Live post and stuff, so I haven't looked at any of the details to tell me exactly what that time frame would be. But again, his backup was there very quickly. The confrontation itself was forced by Mr. Marco Perez by approaching Officer Tudor at such a rapid pace.
Did he ever get a chance to radio in for help after Perez came towards him?
Because of some of the intricacies of the investigation, I do have to remain vague on some of those issues.
So it was the backup officers that actually took Perez into custody?
Yes, sir. It was the backup officers that actually took Marco Perez into custody. Go ahead.
Did Perez know who Tudor was?
Again, based off what I've been able to ascertain, I believe that once Officer Tudor was out of the vehicle, he identified himself as an officer, and he did what officers normally do. They provide commands and ask people to do what they want them to do, such as raise your hands, get on the ground, so that they can effectively make the arrest.
Do we know if they've met before?
I would have to say yes, I do know that they've met before. Officer Tudor has been working diligently over the last month to try to take Mr. Perez into custody. We've arrested him previously on a number of breaking and entering residents as well as vehicles, and also for breaking and entering vape shops. So we have an extensive history of contact between Marco Perez and our Officer Tudor. So, yes, go ahead.
Can you say whether he's wearing the body camera and if there was any nearby surveillance video that helped show you?
As we've canvassed the areas, we've only been able to gain surveillance video from one area at this point. You do know that there was the Facebook Live post that were put out there, so that video is out there someplace, but I don't know that if anyone caught has on the video that they've had the actual shooting itself.
And if he's wearing
and so Officer Tudor would not have been wearing a body cam in his undercover capacity. With that being said, I'm going to conclude the press conference at this time. I would like to thank you guys again for coming out, and I would like to thank the citizens of the city of Mobile for their support and their outpouring of compassion and prayers to the Mobile Police Department. And I would like to remind everybody that the members of the Mobile Police Department, we remain absolute in our resolve to protect the citizens of the city of Mobile. It's our job. We took this oath to protect and serve. And again, Officer Tudor made the ultimate sacrifice of giving his life to the citizens of this community. Thank y'all.
All right, there you have it. Mobile Police Chief Batiste saying Sunday, on his day off, Officer Tudor received information on the investigation he was working on from a confidential source. Authorized to come into work on his day off, Tudor working undercover by himself to lay eyes on Perez. To quote the police chief, Batiste says, as Officer Tudor arrived at Peach Place Inn, Marco Perez approached his car at a rapid rate, causing Tudor to take action and identify himself as an officer. The two got into a scuffle, and at some point, Perez pulled the weapon and shot Officer Tudor multiple times. As a result of his injuries, Tudor died of those injuries. Coming right back, more on this story right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
1225 FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. And we just heard from Mobile Police Chief Florence Batiste and the presser on the surroundings of Sunday and the death of Police Officer Tudor. Talk more about that coming up tomorrow morning on Mobile Mornings. We'll get into some more commentary on that from you as well. But by the way, too, programming note, we are out of here at 1 p.m. Special Armed Alabama coming on at 1 o'clock today. They may be addressing that same subject. We'll be back tomorrow. Normal schedule to our midday mobile today because of Auburn basketball. We will be wrapping it up at 1 o'clock and Armed Alabama on. All right, this segment of the show brought to you by my friends at Harry's. It's been years and years and years now shaving with Harry's. I am a lock. I am in. I love the shave, love the convenience. And Harry's helps you do a couple things. Guys, if your New Year's resolution, look better, save money, Harry's is for you. Be smarter with your personal finances in 2019. How about this? I can now put a real number on it. Harry's can save you about $100 a year if you're a regular shaver. Okay, that adds up, right? That's real deal. And I love the convenience of Harry's. For me, having the blade show up at the house so I don't have to remember to go out and get blades at 9:30 on a Sunday night before a big Monday morning, that is absolutely pivotal. But also, you save money, you get the great shave, you get the convenience. And Harry's wants you to start the new year off right. New customers will get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and travel cover for $3. $3 plus free shipping. Just use code MOBILE at Harry's.com. Make sure to use that code. For a limited time only, Harry's has this special offer for y'all. Listeners to Midday Mobile, will you get a $5 off trial set from Harry's when you use the code MOBILE at Harry's.com. That means you get a razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, travel cover, all for $3. Free shipping as well when you use code MOBILE at Harry's.com. Join the millions of us who've already made the switch and go to Harry's.com today. Use my code MOBILE at checkout to claim your offer. Harry's.com. Make sure to use that code MOBILE. All right, 1227. Coming up in the next segment, I recorded this a little bit earlier because right now he is, I guess, officially speaking to folks there in Foley, and that is Alabama State Auditor Jim Ziegler, who is at least in the exploratory realm of looking at a run for Senate in 2020. It's almost like who's running for the, you know, Democrat nomination for president in 2020. It's like everybody. I think the Republican primary field will be quite full as we look at the 2020 Senate election. Doug Jones, remember, just finishing out that term at Senate. So that is up in 2020. You have a lot of names that have at least toyed with the idea, right? Said that they would be considering it and they're exploring it. And I guess that's what State Auditor Jim Ziegler is doing now. He is having a conversation over at the Gift Horse Restaurant in Foley, talking about his exploratory campaign for his run for Jones's U.S. Senate seat. Now, I will say this to him, as I've said before, let's get out of that habit. The Senate seat does not belong to Doug Jones. The Senate seat does not belong to Richard Shelby. It belongs to the people of Alabama. They happen to be occupying that Senate seat and representing us in the Senate. Absolutely. The Senate seat belongs to the people of Alabama. But yeah, he's having that speech right now. So I talked to him earlier this morning about why, you know, why you're running. And it's pretty interesting. In this conversation, and I'll give you a sneak peek, this will show up on Twitter as it's running. But he says specifically in our conversation, because I asked him about former Governor Bentley being there at inauguration, right? We were watching inauguration a couple Mondays ago up in Montgomery, and we saw the assembled folks to watch inauguration. Of course, Jim Ziegler there is state auditor. But you could see former Governor Bentley there with Siegelman, and Riley was there, and Folsom was there. And the question was, Bentley was invited because he's a former governor. It is how it's done in the state. You invite former governors to these events. But in this specific case, he could have said no, but he didn't. He was there. And so I ask, and he's going to say it here in a second in this interview, that he heard that Governor Bentley was telling, I guess not him specifically, but within earshot, that former Governor Bentley felt that he was invited to the inaugural event because, well, people saw him as a candidate for Senate in 2020. Now, you'll hear a discussion of that here in a second. First time a lot of us have heard that former Governor Bentley feels like he's, you know, the people are behind him for Senate 2020 for the Republican nomination. Now, if I remember correctly, he is limited for as part of his plea deal, right? Limited to running for office. But I think, without pulling the pages of that out, that was specific to state office, which means, I guess, that would be okay within his plea deal he got with his misdemeanor to walk away from the governor's mansion, that he could run for federal office. Well, listen, we'll get it in the words of State Auditor Jim Ziegler. We'll have that interview coming up in just a second. And remember, Armed Alabama coming up at 1 today.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, joined by State Auditor Jim Ziegler and talking about a exploratory campaign for a run at U.S. Senate in 2020. Jim, thanks for being on.
Very good timing with my speech today to the Republican women in Foley, Alabama, in Baldwin County.
Yeah, I know this, and we're recording this beforehand. It got started about an hour ago, but going on, it said here, till 1 o'clock today. So people, if they want to come see you in the parking lot or something like that, have a chance. Tell us, where is it going on right now? Where is this event?
I am speaking at the Gift Horse Restaurant on Laurel Avenue in downtown Foley. It's a famous restaurant and antiques. And this is the meeting of the South Ballard Republican women. I appreciate very much their inviting me to speak, and chose this occasion to give my first speech in my exploratory campaign for Doug Jones' U.S. Senate seat.
Okay, or as I like to call both of them, the two Senate seats that belong to the people of Alabama that happen to be occupied right now by Richard Shelby and Doug Jones. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, explain something to me here. Exploratory campaign versus announcing a run. What's the difference here?
If I can establish a path to victory, if I can raise the money to get my message out, I'll make a decision and pull the trigger and file an actual campaign committee with the Federal Elections Commission. I believe that we need a constitutional, limited government, pro-life, conservative Republican candidate to defeat Doug Jones in next November of 2020. We're sitting here less than 2 years away from the general election. And I want to compete and prove myself that I can win the Republican nomination, defeat Doug Jones, and make a difference in Washington.
I saw that in a email you put out yesterday, an impressor. You said, about the difference between state government not wasting millions, federal government wasting billions. I mean, your job right now in Montgomery is, you say, a watchman against waste.
Absolutely, and that will remain my number one focus. My priority will continue to be watchmen against waste and mismanagement in state government in Montgomery. That's what I've been doing the last 4 years, and I'm going to continue day to day, including today. I've done some work on that. It's a never-ending job, but we need a watchman against waste in Washington. Our federal government has not been good stewards of the taxpayers' dollars. Just recently, I discovered the feds are spending $12 million on a red snapper count in the Gulf that is totally wasted. It's not going to work. And I can show them the problem without the $12 million of the red snapper miscount that the federal government's making. And that's just one of hundreds of things that they do to waste money. We need a Jim Ziegler in Washington, just like we needed one the last 4 years in Montgomery. And I just feel like at that time I was in the right place at the right time with the abuses of the Bentley administration. I exposed many of those and filed the initial ethics complaint against Governor Bentley. And we need a watchman in Washington.
Hey, by the way, just a side note here, and we'll get right back on this exploratory campaign, but your reaction to seeing former Governor Bentley there at the inaugural events in Montgomery a couple Mondays ago.
I did see Governor Bentley at the inauguration, as were three other former governors there. I also saw him at the inaugural ball that night, and people were very curious about who he was going to be with at the inaugural ball. He appeared to be by himself, and people were coming up to him and shaking his hand and having the pictures made with him. I did not. I kept my distance because I was the antagonist. I was the person who exposed some of the waste and corruption in the Bentley administration. And I did not want an awkward situation. So he said he thought he was invited because he's a potential candidate for the U.S. Senate against Doug Jones.
Excuse me? And, wait. Because, I mean, I was going to, you know, I said on that day, I said it's protocol to invite former governors to these events. That's Alabama protocol. But it would also, at that point, I said it would be his decision probably to not show up. But that's in the subjective and not objective realm. That's a whole other conversation, another show. But you're telling us that he said that he was invited because he was being considered, he's considering a Senate run in 2020? Bentley?
Oh, yes. He says that he's looking at that. And he thinks that's why he got invited. Well, I don't. I think he got invited because he's a former governor. And I saw former Governor Siegelman, Jim Folsom Jr., and Riley there. And I spoke to them, was around them, but I just kept a little distance to avoid any awkward situation with former Governor Bentley. He gives me some credit for having him ousted.
Yeah, well, it's just, first I've heard of this, that it wasn't, and I thought the same thing. I thought it was just the protocol of inviting the former governors, but he believes, at least he's saying he believes it's because he's a candidate for Senate, huh?
Exactly, and I will say this, if Robert Bentley runs for that U.S. Senate seat, which I believe would violate his plea bargain agreement.
I think you're right.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to run against him. What a perfect contrast with the Bentley lack of stewardship and mismanagement and personal misuse of the office versus Jim Ziegler, who's attempted to be the watchman and the eyes and ears of the taxpaying public in the Capitol. And that's what I would do in the U.S. Senate.
Now, when you're conducting this exploratory campaign, you're seeing if there's a path to victory. What kind of things do you look at? Are you looking at other parts of the state versus back here at home in Southwest Alabama, or is it different groups? I mean, how do you break that down?
I am beginning to get invitations to go speak as a potential U.S. Senate candidate in various parts of the state, and I'll selectively pick those at night or on weekends, as I continue to do my day job as state auditor. That's number one. And I'm getting a good response, with this exception. A lot of people want to vote for me. They want me to run. But so far, nobody wants to raise the money to get the message out. And
right.
That's part of what we're exploring.
Well, you know, looking at this, it's a funny contrast because you come to some people, I imagine, and ask for support or fundraising. They'll say, "Hey, Jim, this is 2 years away. You know, this is a long time." But in the current political world, it seems like it's just around the corner, 2020.
Well, it is. The qualifying deadline to file is the first Friday in November coming up. Now we're talking about 9 months away is the deadline to make a decision, and that's the time frame I'm working in. Then the Republican primary to pick our Republican opponent for Doug Jones is on March the 3rd, which is 13 and a half months away. So it's right here upon us.
All right. Instead of just because I think the discussion is probably fairly simplistic on why you think a Republican would do a better job than a Democrat as a senator for Alabama. But let's look at primary issues here. You mentioned former Governor Bentley. Why would you be a better candidate for Senate than Congressman Bradley Byrne or State Senator Pro Tem Del Marsh?
All of those fine gentlemen would be far, far better than the Democrat senator, and I intend to be the MVP of taking that seat back for the people of Alabama. I'm going to support and endorse whomever is our Republican nominee, even if it's not me, because that would be the better candidate. I have never been a part of the political establishment, as you know. I serve as a watchman for the taxpayers, and that's something that's unique among these potential candidates. Nobody has put as their top priority to be the watchman against waste and mismanagement in government. We need that. We've got a $21.5 trillion and growing national debt. We've got to get that reined in, and nobody's doing it. I'll do it.
What? Think about this, though. You've shown that you've gone to Montgomery and you've tackled these issues, and commendations on you for that. But you go to Washington. That's a way bigger pond there. That thing is an impoundment. That thing is gigantic. How can one senator, out of the whole body there, make that difference? I mean, you're 1 out of 100, or maybe 2 out of 100, or whatever it would be.
There are at least two historical precedents for one U.S. senator stepping up against waste and making an actual difference. And one of them, believe it or not, was Senator Harry Truman from Missouri. He began to get reports and complaints of waste in the military in the World War II effort. And I'm talking about tens of millions of dollars of waste. So he got his act together and filed a resolution to set up an investigatory committee. It passed. He was named chairman of it, and he did a wonderful investigation credited with saving millions in the defense effort. And one senator started that. And then William Proxmire, senator from Wisconsin, started giving a monthly Golden Fleece Award. He would pick out a ridiculous federal project, a waste of money. And this month, I would have nominated $12 million in the Gulf to count red snapper that does not need to be done, and the methodology is totally flawed.
And we'll talk more about that. That, of course, has been a subject on this show over the years. We'll dig in the details on a date in the future. But if people want to get more information about this exploratory campaign or where you're going to be speaking to groups, where do they go, Jim?
They go on Facebook. I have a very active Facebook page, both about state wastefulness and mismanagement and federal now. And it is just State Auditor Jim Ziegler Facebook page. And you'll learn more about the lack of stewardship of your tax dollars than what you really wanted to know.
You'll see how the sausage is made. State Auditor Jim Ziegler announcing his exploratory campaign for U.S. Senate on with us here on Midday Mobile. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sean.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Shortened version of the show today as it is coming up at 1 o'clock. Armed Alabama special time. We're doing this through the Auburn basketball season. Tonight's game will start pregame coverage at 5 o'clock. And so, the time that Armed Alabama usually is on, they're playing hoops, so they're coming on at 1 today. So welcome that crew. They'll be in here in just a little bit. Also want to remind you a couple things we rolled out. Now, this information, you don't have to commit it to memory or write it down because it's on our Facebook page, on our website, and all that. Dalton's put it up there. But want to just give you, if you can remember these things. Number one, the fundraiser coming up for the family of slain Mobile police officer Sean Tudor. That's coming up next month. Details. Right now, they're looking for volunteers to help out. All right, and then we'll at the same time solicit people to come out to this event, but looking for volunteers and donations right now. Details on our Facebook page. Also, we talked about it this morning, and updates from our news partners at WKRG, but from a post yesterday from Chrissy Tudor, the widow of slain Mobile police officer Sean Tudor, said the public invited to pay their respects, Dolphin Way Baptist Church, on Thursday evening. So that'll be from 5 to 8 Thursday evening. Then another shorter public service will follow on, that's going to be on Friday morning, from 10 to 11. Then graveside burial held at 11 at Mobile Memorial Gardens on Three Notch. But I would wonder about that if the service is 10 to 11 and they have the graveside burial. I would imagine it's going to be a little bit later. And if I remember kind of time frames when, God forbid, look at what we're talking about, in 11 months' time with another Mobile police officer killed in the line of duty, Justin Billa. Remember that procession that left Cottage Hill Baptist Church, and I tell you right now, I remember doing this show live during it, and there were people that were still getting into the procession at Cottage Hill Baptist Church when there were people already at the gravesite. That means the entirety of that route, you had people traveling it. Of course, people alongside the road paying their respects to the family. And I imagine it'll be similar on Friday. But right now, the template we know, Thursday night, 5 to 8, Dolphin Way Baptist Church. Pay your respects to the family there. If you can't make it then, another public service, 10 to 11 a.m. on Friday. Then the burial, we'll say this, the burial to follow at Mobile Memorial Gardens. But we'll have more information on this as we get closer. And those events, there's going to be a lot of them. Because I actually, there's another one we're probably going to announce pretty soon. I'm just waiting to get the ink dry on this with some of our partners and friends. Another event coming up to help out the family as well. And also an event to help out Coast Guard families. That's coming soon. This first one is slated for early February, but believe me, there's going to be, I imagine, a lot more than one events to help out Chrissy Tudor, the widow, and the family here in the loss of a Mobile police officer, Sean Tudor. So we will keep posting those on the Facebook page where you can check them out, because as new ones become available, or if you're doing something, you have an event specifically, you want to get the word out, we'll talk about it on the show, but make sure we have some kind of link to put through, whether it's a Facebook thing, or you can send us an email with the who, what, when, where, how, all that kind of information, and it makes it to where we can put it up and share that information with the most number of people. So do that as we kind of work our way through another tragedy right here in the city of Mobile, and a tragedy for people all along the Gulf Coast and law enforcement all over the country. As you're seeing, law enforcement groups from really all over the country, especially here in the Northern Gulf region, paying their respects to the family of the fallen officer, Sean Tudor. All right, coming up this week on the show, a couple things lined up that are starting to come to bear, and it looks like essentially the ink is dry on these. Essentially the ink is dry, so we'll be able to get these things on the show. Pretty cool conversation we're going to have about what's going on in Montgomery pre-session. Okay, I mentioned that, of course, session gets started in earnest or officially in Montgomery in early March with the House and Senate. But so much of the sausage making, put it in a nice way, gets done before session even gets started in Montgomery. What are the real speed bumps on the docket? Because if you listen, there has been some uniformity of speech coming out of, I would say, the majority of Republicans. You haven't heard much from the Democrats, but it sounds like the Republicans are backing some sort of gas tax increase, right? This is when you hear the governor talk about infrastructure, that's how it's going to be paid for. So a gas tax increase, part of this. Also, it's fallen off a little bit in discussion over the last couple of weeks, but y'all, there's going to be a lotto bill. That was completely clear. Speaker McCutcheon said there will be a lotto bill, and with the speaker, who's a Republican, saying it, that tells me that, well, it's going to be a Republican lotto bill. Okay? That is going to happen, at least going to be discussed. Will it be voted through? I don't know, but it will happen. It will be discussed. And what will that look like? Will it be the trite way of doing a lottery that is for schools? And I say trite, don't, before you get all, you know, typing up your scathing emails, meaning if that is not the number one need in the budget, should the lottery be for schools? Or if we're hearing the infrastructure is the issue, what about an infrastructure lotto? I know, it's not nearly as heartwarming as doing it for the kids, but what about that? Or, if building these prisons is key because of the possibility of a federal receivership and a couple other things we've talked about, should it be a Alabama prisons lotto? Well, we're going to take a deep dive into this coming up later this week. We'll be talking to Todd Stacey with Alabama Daily News. Kind of what have they already laid out? What is being done? Get into that. That's coming up, and I think on tomorrow's show. Looks like it. Yeah. I'm going to put him on the spot. Say he will be on tomorrow to do that. All right. I am out of here. Be back tomorrow morning for Mobile Mornings. Armed Alabama, special time. They're on the way next.